I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Finance Committee. Good morning. Let me briefly run through the agenda for this morning before I turn the floor over to our CFO for discussion of the items. First item on the agenda is approval of the establishment of a trust for the funds that we're putting aside for other post-employment benefits such as retiree health care and prescription drug. We have been beginning that process of funding those future benefits. And the thought is to create a trust to keep those funds secure. As part of the discussion, I'd also like to introduce the topic that we should begin to look at those future post-employment benefit costs as part of our budget process and see if we can't get a greater degree of control. As I read the item, our exposure could be in the billions of dollars, and we're putting aside $5 million a year. I think we've got to work on both sides of that equation. Second, we are being asked to amend the current, actually the past year capital budget in order to allocate certain items for federal funding that have now been identified as both eligible and documented to draw down federal funds. And then finally, in our oversight role, an update on financial management progress, including a report on the submission of all 65 corrective action plans that have been prepared to address the FGA financial management oversight findings. And when we move to that, I certainly want to publicly recognize Dennis and Blair's efforts over the last year to get to this point where we have good news on financial progress and real efforts to meet the challenging deadlines of the FMO report. The final deadline for submission was June 30th. That was met, and I know it's been a lot of effort, but we very much appreciate what's been done. And I'll turn it over to Dennis and to Jack.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Agenda item number three, as the chairman indicated, six board authorization for the general manager to establish an OPEB trust. That resolution also allows the general manager to add, retain, or remove trustees in accordance with the trust agreement. But as background, other post-employment benefits or OPEB primarily refers to retiree health care or drug benefits. On an actuarial basis, Metro's unfunded OPEB liability is about $1.5 billion. But historically, Metro has paid for these benefits on an ongoing basis through the budget process. And as an example, in FY14, Metro paid about $38 million. But if you look over the last 5 years, the average expense with respect to OPEB is about $41 million a year. But given the magnitude of Metro's OPEB liability, and frankly, the unsustainability of a pay-as-you-go strategy, this board took the decision in 2009 to establish this trust. And in FY15 and FY16, started the process of actually funding the trust. In FY15, the board included $4 million in the budget. And in FY16, that the budget's recently approved, it includes $11 million, which collectively add up to $15 million, which will go towards the trust. But the broader goal that this board also agreed to at that time was subject to availability of funds, that there will be a $5 million increment on an annual basis all through 2025, which would then give this organization a greater capacity to address those costs, different from how we're doing it now. So in terms of the structure of the trust itself, The trust is irrevocable, which means that any funds that go into the trust can only go and can only be used with respect to the intended purposes. And as currently structured, the CFO, the Chief Human Resources Officer, and the Director of Labor Relations have been identified as trustees. But as I indicated earlier, the trust agreement and the resolution allows the general manager to add to that count. And the primary responsibilities of the trustees obviously include annual evaluation, selection of investment managers, as well as record keeping and reporting consistent with GASB 45. With that, staff would like to recommend board authorization for the general manager to establish the trust and to appoint and remove trustees as contemplated in the trust agreement. And should the board approve, the initial $4 million, which was part of the FY15 budget, will be transmitted to the trust account promptly. And with respect to the FY16 allocations, obviously we'll do that during the course of the FY16 fiscal year. With that, I'll be glad to respond to any questions that the board may have.
Do you have a question?
You're chairing the, yes. All right, I move that we table this matter because of a number of things, and I'm going to make a recommendation. I have said this many times in the boardroom that we have no clue about our pension fund. We have no clue who our trustees are. We have no clue what they're paying in management fees. We don't even know who our trustees are for our other pension funds. And here's the recommendation, that we create a pension committee of the finance committee that I'd be willing to participate in, that the trustees for all of our pension funds going forward, before we approve this, come before this board, explain what they're doing, how they're doing it, who they are, what their backgrounds are, what the management fees are that they're paying, and we get a better handle before we create another pension fund on top of the five that we already have. So that the motion, and I would urge a second that this be tabled until those things happen.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Called no debate on a tabling motion, right? Yes.
Turn your mic on, Mark.
Mr. Bolger's concerns and comments, trusts themselves are legally independent bodies, so that while the board of directors certainly can invite them, request them, I don't believe there is legal authority for the board to order them to appear.
Can I further respond, Mr. Chairman? Please. All right. Well, then we need some clarification, Mark, about what duties, fiduciary responsibilities that we have as board members vis-a-vis these pension funds, because I think as a board of director that we have a fiduciary responsibility that we haven't undertaken. I've suggested this on numerous occasions, and I would look to you to give us some legal framework about how we should proceed concerning these pension funds besides getting an annuity number, which is in the hundreds of millions of dollars every year, to plug into the budget, and we don't even have a conversation about what these funds are doing. Are they doing well? Are they doing poorly? I don't know. All we do is plug in about $180 million every year, and it's done.
I believe there are supposedly quarterly reports being given to the board, which provide a lot greater information. I believe we've also previously, I believe there was a memo sent to the board describing fiduciary. Let me, look into it, get a copy. I'll ask the board corporate secretary to resend that.
Okay, we have a motion to table. By recollection, there's no debate on that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So come back.
Wait.
With further information.
You didn't ask for the noes.
Oh, the noes?
No.
Show of hands, ayes. One, two, three, four, five, six. Noes? Seven. One, two, three.
Four.
Four. Motion carries, table to a future discussion. And when we have that future discussion, I'd like to see it broadened to what is our approach to OPEB. It's not just to say someday we're going to have to pay out $1.5 billion, I think, as other agencies are doing. We have to look at how those benefits are provided, how they should integrate with the Affordable Care Act, how we really try to provide good benefits for our employees, but not in a way that effectively bankrupts this company.
Mr. Downey, could I just ask for one clarification? Having been through this conversation in my locality, the OPEB trust, at least in Arlington, and as I understand the proposal here, is entirely controlled by the agency. And it is, the need for it is in fact calculated on these actuarial things that look out about giving people the benefits that they were entitled to when they retired. When we went through this conversation in Arlington in 2009, we changed the agreements with our retirees about what they could expect in terms of copay, in terms of other things. That was not a simple nor an easy conversation, and we, of course, do not have unions in Virginia. But you bend the curve by doing those kinds of things. But this is very, very different from the pension fund, which is why I voted no on the table, because I do think we need to get this money over into an irrevocable trust. I do think it would be helpful, since the board has voted to table this, for you to come back and describe to us how you will procure where the money goes, because that actually matters. And as Mr. Downey said, give us some more options to understand where we have the capacity to push that liability down, because I think we need to be clear with that about that with the public. This is not the same as the pension fund, where the employees typically would have their own money invested as well. So,
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, I will accept that part as a very critical way to move forward on this, and I do agree that it is a place that we want to move forward. And I think if you go back, this item didn't just come up this week or this board. It has come before the board two times before, and it came before the board because of the very concerns that were raised. And so if that's the part that we need to review before moving forward, I think it's appropriate to review it. I think, as the objection was expressed, is avoiding the opportunity to really do the what we should be doing and taking a step that I think it would be in the right direction in terms of the kind of controls that need, but also to make the right investments and not delay. So my concern is the statement was so strong that the perception is that this is we're all oblivious of what's going on before us, when that's really not the facts, and that's very disconcerting. I think your question about the pension fund and the trustees is a different question, and that is a question that you can come to, and we can disagree on that one if you want. But I just to say that moving forward on this item is predicated on that is not, I think, the clarity that's needed.
This was on the consent calendar the last time that this was, and it was a concern of board members that it was just getting. Mary, I understand your concern, your issues here. I'm not talking about all that. I think the board needs to know more about how you manage these funds. What I'm talking about is another collection of trustees. Okay, how that works in connection with the issue I keep on raising are other pension funds. We still don't know the answers. So I'm in the dark about how we proceed. I'm asking Mark to tell us what our fiduciary responsibilities are in a very thoughtful way, okay, so that we're clearer about what we're doing here. That's all I'm trying to get at.
Separate those two issues.
Yeah.
come back, understand where we're going with respect to the pension funds, and then what's appropriate with respect to OPEB. I just had one question. The authority to appoint additional trustees, is that intended to be additional management trustees?
That would be the expectation, correct.
I think that should be clarified.
If I could just, I voted against the tabling too. I don't have any problem with our discussing the issue of the pension funds. We've discussed it, gosh, dozens of times it seems to be already. But I know we have new members of the board. I know that things are confusing, and I don't have a problem discussing it again. But it really doesn't have anything to do with this. I mean, this is completely different. This is the trustees would be staff people. They're not, I mean, you know, you can ask the chief financial officer, the chief human resources officer, and the director of labor relations to come and talk to us anytime. So this isn't really have anything to do with that. And as Mrs. Hudgens said, you know, this is not the first time we've talked about this. And again, I understand we have new board members who haven't been involved in the earlier discussions. So, you know, that's fine talking about it. But again, this is not a surprise, and I assume the reason it was on the consent agenda is because we have talked about it before, and this is a reiteration of stuff that's been talked about before. And maybe just a suggestion to management that you do need to remember that we have a number of new board members, and things that those of us who have been on the board for a very long time may think are hum, yo-ho-hum kinds of things, the new board members who haven't seen this before might have a different reaction. So we might have to do a little, you know, backing and filling so that everybody's up to speed.
I appreciate that, Ms. Porter, but I would like you to go to the item, and it gives you, and this is in our package because of exactly the point that you note. The dates and where the material can be found on the last dates of the discussions that had and how we got here. And I think this board package was prepared and revised in that manner for the exact concerns that were raised, that an item before it comes before the board and it has no background whatsoever. The background is very explicit. If you want to read the background, which is what we should be doing, then we will have that. And it says it. And I think we've worked to try our best to not be oblivious of the work that we're doing and simply reacting to staff. If you have a question from staff, we can pull back the data. But I just was concerned about the fact that the impugning that we would move forward and have no idea what we're doing, and therefore this would not be good for us. And that's not how I feel about that item.
So clarity as to what we will come back with and how we'll work with Mr. Bolger. And I do think, while they are separate issues, our oversight of the pension activity is something we need to spend more time on. Mm-hmm. Knowing what's happened in other places, it's been a big concern.
Well, just as a comment, last week, the largest pension fund in the country, CalPERS, mm-hmm. okay, admitted that they didn't know how much they were paying in management fees. The estimate is that they think they pay $1.5 billion a year, but they don't know. All right, I don't know how much we pay in management fees, okay, for all of our pension funds, and then adding this to that batch, I realize they're different, gives me great concern. And that's the story that was about the California pension fund just blew my mind. But they didn't know how much they were paying management fees.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
If I could, I think, again, in the last couple of years, and I know we have a lot of new board members, that we did, the general counsel at the time did provide a summary of the responsibilities of the board versus those of the staff, and we'll resurrect that and get that sent to you. We provided a quarterly, we can get the last quarterly report that we provided to the board on that, and then staff will review the responsibilities of the board and staff and see how much more information we can provide to the board within the guidelines.
For providing
it, right.
How are we sure that we're getting what we need? Another mm-hmm. news story of the last week from MBTA in Boston. Taking an independent look at their pension funds, they discovered they're about half as much funding as they thought they had. I mean, that's the kind of thing that we really have to avoid getting into. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Donnan, can I just ask one additional question? Mr. Anasiki, maybe you know the answer to this. Does the lack of a irrevocable trust have any impact on our credit ratings?
No.
It does not. Okay.
The only thing it does do is it doesn't give us the ability to invest the money and begin
to grow. Right, so the money can't grow as long as it's just sitting on our books. That's the biggest financial.
The only person who would come in and take it away would be us, so I wouldn't want to do that. Right, anything further on this subject? If not,
can we receive a commitment to have a vote on this by September? The background information is provided.
If this comes back in September, it will be considered.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Thank you. Second item is the amendment to the 2015 capital budget. Mr. Anasiki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will have Mr. Webster present this item.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today's staff requests committee approval of a year-end amendment to the fiscal year 15 capital budget to transfer existing capital budget authority to the railcar rehabilitation project. Budget transfer is necessary, as was mentioned, in order to accommodate additional railcar rehabilitation labor and parts costs that were initially charged to the FY15 operating budget and then to facilitate the reimbursement of FTA grant eligible costs. Just as background, Metro's railcar rehabilitation program provides labor and parts necessary to rebuild and replace railcar components that are utilized in heavy overhauls of the railcar fleet. These component overhauls maintain the railcars in a state of good repair, improve reliability, ensure safe operations. Heavy overhaul program complements Metro's routine preventive maintenance programs. FTA's FMO oversight review and subsequent internal reviews performed by management had identified potential concerns regarding the eligibility of costs, of certain costs for FTA grant reimbursement. In light of those concerns and to avoid putting those grant funds at risk during FY15, staff took a step back and charged the majority of those costs that were in question for component rehabilitation projects to the FY15 operating budget rather than to the FTA program. While we worked with FTA to establish the eligibility of those costs. And, of course, we've been working very closely with the FTA over the past year and have made substantial progress recently in the last quarter. And during that fourth quarter, FTA approved approximately $224 million in reimbursements, including some substantial reimbursements for force account labor costs, totaling about $130 million. So based on guidance we've received from FTA, we've identified $14 million of additional FY15 railcar rehabilitation parts costs that are expected to be eligible for FTA capital grant funding and reimbursements. In order to accommodate these additional eligible costs in the railcar rehabilitation capital project, staff requests that amendment to the FY15 capital budget to transfer unspent budget authority from other projects. The projects that would be used in this case are the bus rehabilitation project and the bus repairables project. And the total FY15 project budget for railcar rehabilitation would increase from about $32 million to about $46 million. Following board adoption of the amendment, staff would work with FTA to revise the grant agreements as necessary that are currently in place. And after receiving FTA's approval for those revisions, we would transfer the eligible capital costs to the railcar rehabilitation project from the operating expense budget. And after the costs are charged to the project, staff would then submit the required detailed supporting documentation to FTA for reimbursement of the costs. So our recommendation is for the committee to approve an FY15 capital budget amendment to transfer existing capital budget authority to the railcar rehab project.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Is there a discussion? I have one question.
Thanks. Source of funds, $14 million. Is that work that didn't get done?
In this case, it is actually work like in the railcar rehabilitation project. We've been evaluating costs for eligibility for reimbursement and moving them to the capital project as appropriate. In the projects that are moving, where we're moving the budget authority from, have a similar situation. They're component rebuild projects. In those cases, we have not identified sufficient eligible component costs to move to the capital budget, so there's capacity in those projects. The work still got done. It's funded through the operating budget.
Great. Thank you.
Prior years, we've had a debate when the operating budget's been adopted with respect to how much of that operating budget would be paid for by the so-called preventive maintenance program, and we have limited that to $30 million a year. One time a few years ago went up to 60, but it's gone back to 30. This effectively is increasing this for one time. I'm just hoping it's not setting a precedent for future operating budgets.
Mr. Chairman, this is actually separate and distinct from the preventive maintenance.
This is separate from
yes,
the preventive.
Yes, this
okay.
is. These are heavy overhauls
actual
of
heavy
components.
Overhaul
yes.
Work. Okay, yes. That's good. And the other positive benefit here is this is going to allow us to get closer to drawing down all of the federal grants that are out there through reallocation of ineligible costs to eligible costs.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, I'm comfortable with that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Finally, a report on the FMO progress.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Our objectives today are to provide you a brief financial update with respect to our grants management status and present the monthly progress status of our committed corrective action plans in response to the FTA's financial management oversight review report. In addition, Metro's Director of the Office of Internal Compliance, Liz Sullivan, to my left, will provide her fourth quarter report summary. This month's FMO reporting includes progress through the end of June. Metro's total federal grant draws since the March 2014 ECHO drawdown restriction was imposed now total $375 million, 60% of which, about $224 million, was received in the fourth quarter alone. Since May 1st, WMATA has reduced its outstanding short-term debt by 43% from $503 million to $286 million. This includes making $133 million in payments on our grant anticipation notes, leaving $67 million of the original $200 million remaining outstanding. And we paid down $84 million on our lines of credit, with $219 million still outstanding. With respect to the three lines of credit that were due to expire this month, almost $89 million Bank of America Merrill Lynch line of credit was renewed for a full year to June 23rd of 2016. Our line of credit with U.S. Bank was extended for 3 months through August 31st, 2015. And our line of credit with Wells Fargo was also extended 3 months to September 25th. And full year extensions of those are dependent upon us issuing our year-end audited financial statements from fiscal year 2014. Moody's Investor Service published an issuer comment about WMATA on June 18th, acknowledging mitigation of near-term liquidity risks with recent partially paying down our lines of credit and grant anticipation notes. Yet their rating and outlook of WMATA remain unchanged due to concern that the actions required to respond to the FDA's safety management inspection report might cause new liquidity challenges if safety improvement projects require new financing. And regarding the extended caps, we completed the grant reconciliations, and 18 of 35 grants that were opened during the report are now closed. Our summary timeline recaps these major milestones of the corrective action plans that were submitted, the follow-up requests we received, and follow-up submissions we provided, all since the report was issued in June of 2014. And on significantly, again, on June 30th, we submitted the evidential documentation to satisfy the extended corrective action plans as we committed. The FMO dashboard composite, again, is completion risk of our 65 corrective action plan items, the quality of our manually submitted drawdown packages, and the FMO-related training, and then the summary of the recommendations that were fulfilled based on our CAP submissions. This month's FMO dashboard has three updates since our last report in June to the FMO cap status by finding, manual draw submission quality, reimbursement success rates, and the completion of FTA recommendations. Now, I'm pleased to report that we completed the budget reconciliations and transmitted all associated budget revisions on time by the June 30th deadline to satisfy the extended corrective action plans And we submitted the final advisory comment corrective action plan regarding integrating risk management as part of the business planning process in developing the fiscal year 2015 budget. Therefore, WMATA successfully completed and submitted all 65 of the originally committed corrective action plans in response to the June 2014 FDA Financial Management Oversight Review Report. Our manual draws submission package quality metrics track the approval rate of both individual package submissions as well as the total cumulative dollar amounts of manual draw submissions since the imposition of the echo draw restriction. During June, the FDA approvals of our submissions averaged 99%, and our cumulative manual reimbursement success rate through June has now increased from 98% to 99%. The compliance training graphs was unchanged since June. And our final dashboard quadrant chart reflects the number of corrective action plans submitted against the 9 material weakness and significant deficiency findings and the number of FMO report recommendations within those findings that our corrective action plan submissions have been deemed by FDA as having been adequately fulfilled. FMO findings that have been 100% fulfilled are highlighted in green. Based on additional feedback from FDA on our CAP follow-ups since the last FMO board update, the FMO findings recommendation for significant deficiency, Roman numeral 3.4, controls over financial management system access, have been fully completed and are deemed as adequately fulfilled. The recommendations still requiring FDA confirmation of corrective action plans that we just submitted on June 30th are for budget controls and cash and grant management controls. Our key activity achievement for June was completing all the budget reconciliations and transmitting all the associated budget revisions on time by the June 30th deadline. Also noteworthy for June is that the $88 million in grant drawdown reimbursements was the highest amount since the manual submission, highest monthly amount, single month amount, since the manual submission restriction was imposed. In fact, the previous month, May, is now the second largest month when we had $84 million of reimbursements. And now I'd like to turn this FMO update presentation over to Liz Sullivan, Director of the Office of Internal Compliance, to summarize the compliance review and feedback activities that took place in the fourth quarter of fiscal 2015 between April and June.
Thank you, Blair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The objective for this item today is to provide you with information on the compliance reviews that were initiated by our office through June 30th. As the committee may recall from the last time we were here, the Office of Internal Compliance is responsible for conducting objective reviews of WMATA's adherence to financial management controls. This would include, of course, the policies and the related policies as well as the related procedures. While our office reports to WMATA's chief financial officer, it's important for us to note that we do not participate in any financial management controls, nor do we participate in any financial management processes. What you have in front of you is a compliance review matrix that outlines and provides really a high-level summary of the status of all the reviews that were initiated through June 30th, details of which would be sent in the quarterly compliance matrix to the board. As outlined in the next slide, you would note that majority of the reviews completed by our office through the month of June were primarily focused on FMO CAP follow-up items. We consider the CAPs within the budget controls, cash and grants management, federal financial reporting, procurement areas, and evaluated these through the control certification of self-assessment process. This process allows staff with financial management control responsibilities to have an active role in the review process. As part of this process, our office was instrumental in identifying the control activities that resulted from the CAPs that were submitted to the FDA. As part of this process, we also facilitated the identification of the risks, the control or regulatory expectations, as well as the control objectives, and documented this, provided this to management in form of a risk and control matrix. The control owners, persons assigned to these controls, were given the opportunity to self-evaluate and review the control activities identified to them, while our office was able to independently confirm compliance through the examination of supporting documentation. The reviews initiated through June 30th considered 42 of our 65 FMO CAP items. From these 65 FMO CAP items, the 42 we examined, we were able to identify 85 control activities resulting from our CAP submitted. So far, based on our evaluation, 30 of those control activities have been identified as compliant. So they were initially deemed compliant by control owners, and they were independently confirmed as compliant by our office. In addition, we have 5 control activities that have been confirmed by management or control owners that are still under review by us. We have 4 control activities that have been examined and have been deemed to require additional remediation by control owners. And at this time, we have about 36 control activities that are still under review by control owners. The control owner, the activities that are currently under review are primarily in the budget and the grants management process areas. We also have identified 11 control activities that are assigned to program offices, and these will be yet to be assigned to them for review. Will be assigned as part of our future review efforts. As of the end of the month of June, we are also in the process of initiating similar review processes for 10 CAP items within our FCA-funded asset area, as well as our payroll and human resource process areas. We also have plans to consider the balance of our CAPs as part of future reviews. At this time, I would like to just provide a brief overview, a summary of other activities within our area, one of which is a review of FTA responses. We would like the committee to be aware that the Office of Internal Compliance actively participates in reviewing responses to the FTA findings. When FTA responses are developed, our office works with the staff applicable responsible for responding to these items. We review the management responses as well as the suggested corrective action plans to ensure that they completely meet or sufficiently address the root cause of the issue as well as the recommendations from FTA. With the recent final submission, our office was able to review the submissions prior to sending them through to FTA as well as facilitate internal review within WMATA. We've also participated in efforts to ensure compliance with WMATA's grants management manual by reviewing the work associated with developing timekeeping SOPs or standard operating procedures as directed by WMATA's CFO. A final highlight relates to direct labor review draw reviews. We also participated in the special purpose review which was initiated to provide a reasonable assurance that the cost associated with recent FCA draws was supportable by WMATA's records, as well as ensuring that the costs have been charged to the same activity for which work was performed. In addition to confirming our current processes, these certainly helps to support also the certification statements made by WMATA's officials in relation to these draws. As we work towards finalizing the reviews we've initiated through June 30th, we're also making plans to develop our work plan or risk-based work plan for the FY 2016 reviews. Mr. Chairman, this concludes my section of this report, and at this time, I would like to turn it over to Blair.
Thank you, Liz. I'd like to close by reviewing our next steps. In the upcoming weeks and months, we'll be focusing on the activities for completing the drawdowns of the incurred costs identified that are associated with the recently reconciled open grants that were cited in the FMO report. We're going to continue having our biweekly review meetings with the FTA's Region 3 staff. They've become highly productive communication sessions for collectively addressing any key issues, open items, and follow-ups in the areas of our grant drawdown submissions, applications, force count plans, and cost allocation plans, among others. Our internal compliance staff continues to conduct follow-up reviews and controls certifications to help ensure sustain compliance with FMO-related corrective actions and further strengthen internal financial management controls. The next update from our Director of Internal Compliance will be the summary of the first quarter fiscal year 2016 activity in October. Mr. Chairman, that concludes this month's FMO update report. At this time, Ms. Sullivan, I would be happy to answer any questions from the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Members of the committee have questions for Mr. Fishburne or Ms. Sullivan? Yes.
I just wanted to note that I am absolutely delighted to see that the CAP status is, we have completed everything and we completed it by the June 30th. I know we have a long way to go. We have a lot of things we have to deal with, but I think that's a significant milestone. Thank you.
Thanks for the report. Second what Kathy said. Just 2 questions on the next step, Blair. The 18 on... 18 reconciled grants. Is that the new batch that we just got apportionment from FTA?
There's actually now, one of those is closed. There's actually 17 open from the original 35.
Yeah.
And then there's 8 more new grants that were applied for and awarded since the FMO report came out. So we have a total of 25 grants that are open now. And we have a capacity on those of about $730 million.
Okay. For the board to understand it, so what fiscal year of those grants are we talking about here? Are we talking about fiscal at 2014, 2013?
The 8 new were, is it 4 and 4? 4 from federal fiscal year 14 and federal fiscal year 15.
15.
Right?
I think, importantly, the grants that were subject to the FMO review were the grants that were open during that time period.
Right.
So that's the 35 grants that's referenced.
Okay.
Of those grants, 18 are closed.
Right.
17 remain open. Those are from federal fiscal 13 and prior. The new grants are from federal 14 and now the applications that we've recently submitted are for federal 15 grant funds.
Okay. All right. So they spread across a number of federal fiscal years. So just so the board knows, are these the formula grants or are the PREA grants as well or what?
Both.
Okay. What time period they're on. So appreciate it.
Mr. Goldman, a quick question for Mr. Fishburne. Just on this chart, your next step chart shows that there's still $155 million in labor costs pending at FTA for reimbursement.
The $155 million is the amount that is remaining on the 17 grants that are still open. And some of that may be labor, some might would be vendor costs.
In addition to the $155 million, are there any grants, other grants that have been completed that are awaiting reimbursement by FTA?
Well, we have, other than those, there's the additional grants that we were just talking about with Mr. Bulger. Then we, and of those, we probably have incurred about another $150 to $200 million of costs that are yet to be reimbursed. So the total would be between 3 and 350.
Have we applied for reimbursement for those grants?
The grants have been applied for. We haven't submitted all the drawdown packages for them. We haven't for all those.
Yeah.
So my question is there anything else besides the $155 million that's pending before FTA right now that has been submitted and we're awaiting reimbursement for?
Yes, there are active reimbursement requests ongoing with FTA.
And what's the amount of that? What's the value of that in addition to the $155 million?
The current value as of this, I mean, there are requests going in each day. So the value is in the tens of millions at the moment. I can follow up on the specifics.
I'm just trying to get a handle of what the total amount that we're waiting for FTA to reimburse is.
Well, at this point, it's less than 20. I think the point you're trying to make is with respect to the significant unreimbursed portion with respect to labor cost. That conversation is still ongoing. It has not been applied and will not be applied until we get a definitive decision from FTA with respect to how they're going to dispose of the fact that there were no timesheets for those labor costs.
Now, I understand the issue with the labor costs. I'm just trying to see what else is out there that we're waiting for reimbursement besides the labor costs within the $155 million.
Okay. So, if I recall accurately, the last time I was here, I gave you the number of about $250 million in the aggregate. It's probably gone to about 280 to 300. I mean, again, it's a dynamic number. It changes as we undertake capital projects and then spend some time reviewing those things to make sure that we're not in violation of any of the rules or charges. So it's a fair number to say 250 to $300 million.
250,
300
as of
correct.
This date.
Correct.
Thanks. Thank you.
Mr. Corcoran,
and
Mr. Bulger.
If I could follow up on Mr. Bulger's question, which of the $155 million do you worry is at risk of not being
used? If I may respond, that of the total capital cost that Metro has incurred, I believe that the greatest concern is respect to those associated with time labor without timesheets. That's the greatest risk that we face. But as I've indicated in the past, we continue to have
conversations with FTA, and we're looking for opportunities to address the absence of a timesheet based on controls around labor cost. And while we are confident that, you know, they will make a positive, or rather, but we're confident that we will recover some of those funds, we are unsure of when that decision will be made or how that decision will be made, and ultimately what level of amounts we're going to be able to recover at this point.
So really, it's still all at risk?
That's a fair question, a statement.
Mr. Chairman, as I remember, Therese McMillan, the acting Federal Transit Administrator, is going to join us.
At our next 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today. This the thought, do we need to be prepared to discuss any of that, of this, with the acting Federal Transit Administrator?
For main purpose.
Yeah, somehow.
Address the safety issue.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sure this would be fair game.
I just thought we'd have a two-week discussion about what would be our agenda for Ms. McMillan. Well, I'll leave that to you.
I'll talk with her.
If I may say, I mean, FTA has been extremely supportive of our positions and the efforts that we are taking to try and not just recover the funds, but to address the environment that led to this. And so I want to be sure that we are communicating that to you, so that as you interact with them, either here or elsewhere, that we are obviously indicating our appreciation of that of that cooperation. That said, every opportunity that we have to encourage them to make the right decision, I think is the right one. And so the board will have to make a decision whether or not it is an issue that you wish to raise in this forum or in a different forum.
Is it our expectation that at some point they will send the FMO contractor back in for a follow-up review? We don't know when that will be.
That is correct.
Any other questions? One other question I had was on the compliance training. Those numbers don't seem to have moved a lot in the last several months. Is it trouble getting people to come to the training, or is it turnover, or what's the issue?
We haven't had any really trouble getting people. I think it's been we're trying to actually train new employees when they come in. Mm-hmm. So we're not having these dedicated courses like we had initially. This is, again, part of the new employee orientation training.
Right. And if I may also add to that, one of the things that we've been working on with members of our human resource department is to try to embed compliance training within the new employee orientation training.
Orientation.
Correct. It's just part of a standard thing, so we've been in discussions with them. The other thing is we've been working with getting a training mechanism to allow some sort of ongoing training in-house, an annual training that would allow employees to just log onto the system and complete their own training. So we certainly believe that training at the beginning and ongoing training is important, and we're working on those efforts.
Any other questions? If not, I would move to adjourn. We'll be going up to finish the customer service executive session. And I have to ask Jennifer, are Rider Advisory Council people here? Yes, so we'll shoot for about a 1 o'clock session with the RAC members. Okay.